evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Finding the Funny here on CITR 101.9. As always, we'd like to take this moment to thank the Musqueam people for housing us here at CITR on their ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory. And now, the moment you've been waiting for. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Finding the Funny. With your host, Nico McEwen. Hey there, ladies and gentlemen, we are very excited to be introducing a new member of our team here at Finding the Funny. That's right, he is a fellow comedy enthusiast, and he is going to be conducting some in-the-field interviews with some very special guests. So, fittingly, today's episode is called Interview Comedy. And now, a quick content warning.
As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we are going to be listening to Douglas Vandley, our newest member at Finding the Funny, and his interview with the very talented people, a part of the team that is Last Podcast on the Left.
Why do the girls force me to kill them? Why do the girls make me make them my dolls?
Well, before we get started, I've got some gifts for you guys.
Oh,
ooh, wow.
Oh, gifts.
Oh, fuck also, yeah, thanks, dude. I actually lost my 100 bullets. I lost my 100 bullets collection, so this is fucking awesome. First 19 issues. Right. It's perfect.
Yeah, this is for when you get sworn in. As
Bribery, thank you. Ooh.
That is child pornography. You actually can't see this on the radio, so.
What do we got in the case? Oh, it's a pen. Thank you so much. It's a very nice pen.
That's incredibly nice. Sweet.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. That's so sweet.
So, I hope you can, sign some papers with that one.
Yeah, this is cool. I feel like the Joker in 89's Batman. Yeah. The pen is mightier than the sword.
Yeah, I'll sign yes to these camps.
Thank you, Henry. Very good.
We can't say what this is on the radio.
I am thankful.
It's a pair of socks.
Wow, what a nice pair of smoke
with
socks.
With naked little kids on it. Again, child pornography. That's two gifts in a row. Thank you.
We're going to get this kid expelled out of college, by the way.
Are you actively going to college, or are you just an employee now?
I'm a volunteer, though.
So you get paid nothing?
I get paid nothing, so...
He gets paid in experiences like this.
Yeah.
Take it down from them.
You're good. Yeah, that's...
Well, I mean, it's like a $30 membership for a year, so...
Oh, not bad. This is really nice, dude. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This is really cool.
I'm here with Marcus Dog Meat Parks, Ben the Truth Kissel, and Henry Two Real Zabrowski.
Yeah!
Uh-oh!
Last podcast on the left. So I think a lot of the reason why you've got such a strong fan base is you guys are clearly very good friends with each other. And I just wanted to know how you all met.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I met Marcus through a mutual comedian friend, Lawrence, Mike Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And I did an interview with him called Portrait of a Comedian, so that's how Marcus and I met. And I met Henry when I moved into Holden McNeely's house from the Round Table of Gentlemen.
Yes.
And he was in a sketch group called Murder Fist, and that was how it all worked out for me.
Yes, and we all just kind of were saddled together. And then Kissel, the first thing he did was he gave me a signed autograph frame of a Chris Farley autograph. He gave me, and that cemented our friendship.
Yeah. It made his girlfriend very upset at the time. His girlfriend at the time very upset because I got him a better gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and me and Ben bonded over Sasha Gray, mutual love of Sasha Gray. And then I invited Ben over to my house to see Cannibal Holocaust because he'd never seen it before. And we laughed the entire time. We laughed our asses off beginning to end, and we knew that we were friends.
And for those that know, Cannibal Holocaust, it was, what is it, is a
Italian.
It's an Italian film?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's such an it is such a realistic movie. The director actually got called into court because they thought he actually murdered the lead actress, and the lead actress had to show up, like, fly all across the world to show up in a courtroom and be like, "I'm not dead." Yeah. Like, that's how realistic this movie is.
They murdered that turtle, though.
Yeah, they murdered the turtle and the shrew
But when it comes down to, that's movie making.
Yeah.
So much worse shit happens when you're making movies. Look at the guy. What was the guy that produced the
with the railroad tracks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For what was the Allman Brothers film?
Yeah.
A woman died. The camera assistant died. Mm-hmm. She got sucked into the path of an oncoming train because she didn't want to lose her job.
Could be worse.
Could be much worse.
We'll be right back with more Finding the Funny after an ad from our sponsors.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate. He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show. What's your job?
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Yeah, you talked about your mutual love of horror films. I know that's how the podcast started, Lost Podcast on the Left. Obviously, a reference to Lost House on the Left.
Yep.
I just want to know what interests you most about the subject matter of the show.
Ooh. Mm. You mean like subjects or just like the general overall?
Yeah, like maybe cryptids or...
I mean, I could pretty much point it towards being raised Catholic. I think that when I was raised as a Catholic little kid, you basically worship a nude man that is strung up in a medieval torture device, caught in mid-scream, and then you drink his blood once a week. You know, all these, like, and everyone just thinks it's great. You talk to a series of diddlers who call themselves the hands of fucking Allah themselves, who come and talk to you. So I feel like that kind of put this...
I think you're mixing up the religions there.
No, they're all the same. It's all the same cruel, vindictive, fake, merciless God.
You know what's funny? I grew up in a very religious home as well, so that does make you think about life and death very young. And like Henry said, eating the body and drinking the blood of Christ always was extremely creepy. But when it comes to the subject that I like, really is exploring the dark side of life so you can defeat it, because I think... We were all, I mean, I personally was a horrified kid of, like, everything, and but you just kind of dive in and follow the fear, and then you conquer it.
No, I grew up in, like a weird Texas dirt town that I've been told is, like, a disturbing, unsettling place, but it's totally normal to me, so, like, weird, disturbing things have always been just kind of the norm. So for me, like people look at our lives and they say, like, oh, how can you look at that horrifying stuff all the time? It's just, I don't know, that's just what I've always been into, and... just where my mind has always lived.
I feel like that's true for a lot of our fans and also us as peoples. It's like, I just was always into it. I've been into horrible shit since I was a little kid. I always loved horror movies. I was fascinated with them since a toddler. I would go and to the library as soon as my mom would let me leave the house on my own, like 6 or 7, I'd walk to the library.
I think you're for 6 or 17.
Yes. But I would go and I remember that they used to have an occult section, and I used to go and get all of the books out on demonology and sit and read through all of them, like how you could tell a crime was committed by a satanic cult, especially in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was so much of that, the satanic panic,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of, I was way into it. And then I had a librarian, sort of like Neverending Story, and I don't think I was molested, but a librarian took me aside and told me that it's very good to, the more you learn about something that you're scared of, the more power you get over it. So I kind of just followed.
No, now I'm not so sure about that caveat you put on all that. It really is something that we discovered while doing this show. We kind of turned over a rock and we found all of these creatures that were into the same subject matter that we are into. And then we brought humor to it and people really love it.
Yeah. Now, I've inherited a large stack of old Weekly World Newses from a dead aunt in Oklahoma. And I devoured these things, you know, beginning to end, and I found a picture of Dead Bundy's corpse right after he'd been executed, and I cut it out. I was like 5 or 6, and I cut it out and put it on my wall right next to my bed, and I've just been fascinated with this stuff ever since.
Thank you, Marcus, for saying that. yeah. recorded ways.
And I think you called him Dead Bundy, which I like a lot.
Dead Bundy.
Dead Bundy. That's what Ted Bundy is now. It was a real ant that was actually dead on top of a pile of those magazines. And when he says devourers, he ate them.
Do you guys want to play a game?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is no, we just talked about this in the last episode. Never played. No, the answer is no.
I just listened to that today. All right, Marcus, you're holding the mic, so I'll ask you first. So just right off the top of your head, who's your favorite killer?
I would say Ed Gein for the story, Andre Chikatilo for the kills.
All right, but you got to pick one.
All right, I would say Ed Gein.
Okay, Ed Gein. Right. And now, Ben, who's your favorite comedian?
Oh, my goodness. Favorite comedian? Well, I mean, that's John Candy, Chris Farley. That's a combo. I would just have to say Chris Farley if I have to choose one.
All right, we'll say Chris Farley. And then, Henry, your favorite cryptid?
That's interesting.
I think the Mothman in the end is my favorite because he's somewhere between a psychic creature and a real thing. And also he hung out in a TNT field, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
Like the guys from AC/DC.
Ooh, yeah. And TNT is a drink, a beverage that a lot of the people who are heavily intoxicated on heroin are taking. They're taking a lot of heroin and they're drinking TNT, which I never heard of before.
I've never heard of it. Is that a malt liquor?
I'm assuming. I am assuming.
All right, so we've got Ed Gein, Chris Farley, and the Mothman. Fuck, marry, kill.
Well, you got to. You cannot marry Chris Farley. That is sad. Oh, but you can't kill him either.
Yeah, you do.
That means, that gives you one option.
If you reread the Chris Farley show and you watch the documentary, he was a manipulative person.
Yeah.
You have to kill Chris Farley.
Wow.
Unfortunately, we have to kill him. Ed Gein, you marry.
Absolutely.
Because of...
loyalty, I guess.
Yes, and also...
love. Undying love.
Talent.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And you, you just fuck him off, man.
you just fucking Mothman so hard. This is just like what's the sexy stuff they do with comic books and stuff.
Hentai,
Whatever it is. Smash. But like the movie The Tick, the TV show The Tick.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it's like that, like sexy The Tick, which you just said about Mothman.
What?
He's a moth.
Yeah, his sidekick.
Sexy too. Arthur.
Arthur. I don't want to fuck Arthur. I know the guy who's playing. But I know the guy who's playing Arthur in the new Tick reboot, Griffin Newman. I don't want to fuck him.
All
right. I don't want to fuck the Tick either. I want to fuck the Mothman. That's what I want to do.
All right.
Because who knows? You could smash something together to look like boobies on him.
You can have whatever you want.
So is there anything you guys want to plug?
Last podcast on the left.
nothing here that was said is going to help anything. For
nothing.
Us. So I would actually say we're doing nothing. Don't look into us.
I'm on season 2 of Crashing on HBO. I don't know when the hell that's going to come out.
Yeah,
because that show needs help.
That's good.
I would say 5 stars on iTunes. Don't fuck around. Don't give us 3 stars. Because you don't like a sound quality of one episode. That's stupid. How empty is your life?
Unbelievable.
Don't give us 4 stars either. I know now you're going to specifically do it, but think about what you're doing to the children.
Right. Just keep on following everything on the network. Able Against Top Hat, Roundtable of Gentlemen, all the shows. And you can watch me on Fox News.
And hail you.
Hail you, dude.
So that was the interview by Douglas Vandelay with the guys from Last Podcast on the Left. A huge thank you to them for sharing their time with us here at Finding the Funny, and we hope you enjoyed. We'll be right back after a message from our sponsors.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking for...
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
Hey, 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 everybody. We are back with more Finding the Funny here on CITR 101.9, and we want to do a shout-out to our social media. You can find us at Finding the Funny on Twitter. Check out all the awesome things we'll be posting, whether it be certain stand-up comedy things going on in Vancouver, or maybe it's just about our upcoming episodes, or maybe we want to hear from you, the fans, about what you think about the episodes, and we'll talk about it in further episodes. Any of this is possible. Just check us out at Finding the Funny. Bonnie on Twitter. So, ladies and gentlemen, the other week I got the very good fortune of going to see John Mulaney here at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre in Vancouver. To nobody's surprise, he did not disappoint, even though he did inform us he was coming down from a cold or was not feeling great, but he still crushed it and his energy could not have been better. The first thing I want to mention, however, though, is a bit by his opening act. Unfortunately, I cannot remember the opening act's name. I want to say his name was Sean. If any of you know or were at the show, feel free to tweet us at Finding the Funny. But basically, the ending of the opening act bit was somewhat very similar to a bit from Dane Cook's Vicious Circle. Now, that said, I know Dane Cook himself isn't the most well-regarded comedian when it comes to his own material, but basically this bit, and you guys can tell me what you think. I'll summarize it and you tell me if it's too similar. He's doing a bit about how black women fight differently than white women, and he says how white women will say one small thing and then that'll essentially explode in your mind, and he uses the reference to slicing you like a katana. For any of you that remember Dane Cook's Vicious Circle, his bit about why women win fights basically says that they say one small thing and it detonates in your mind, and he uses a reference to slicing you with a samurai sword. I just thought those two bits were too similar, and I wanted to mention them for anybody that didn't see the show, and also for any of you that did, just so you can think about that bit again. He was still a great opening act, nothing taken away from him. I think he was really funny. I loved his bit where he essentially snapped and said, "I was walking behind a woman, not following, and the timing could not have been better." But I just thought I'd reference this last bit he closed with and how it seemed oddly similar to me. So now on to John Mulaney. I was so glad he didn't hold back in regards to referencing his own celebrity, I guess you could say, as he is more famous than his first two bits now, or at least in my opinion he is. He had Oh Hello on Broadway. His last special, of course, The Comeback Kid, did great. And he even has a show on Netflix called Big Mouth. And Oh Hello and Big Mouth are both done with his friend and fellow comedian Nick Kroll. I won't tell you too much about John Mulaney's Kid Gorgeous in regards to specific bits, but as I don't believe this will be one included in the special, he started the show by talking about two front seats that were left empty. And wow, thank you, Vancouver, for keeping me humble and whatnot and jokes in that regard. But then he said, actually, you know what? I bet Nick Kroll bought those seats and just so he could leave them empty. And I just thought that was really funny. It was a nice way to kind of mention Nick Kroll's name. Of course, then when Nick Kroll got applause, he did a bit, which I think I've seen him do before, where he essentially says, "Don't clap for another comedian," in a funny way. I don't want to talk too much about it, but I just wanted to reference Louis C.K. I have talked about him in the show, essentially how I think he is a great comic due to light of recent events and whatnot. I'm extremely disappointed in a very talented comic, and even though I've heard back and forth about how it was a dark time of his life and it was a long time ago, that doesn't excuse anything, and it's pretty unbelievable what's happening in the world right now, or I guess not right now, but at least the fact that these are now coming to light. For any guys listening, don't be assholes. Like, I don't understand it anyway. I don't want to talk too much about it, but it's extremely devastating, and I hope this changes, and I hope for the best for the world we live in, that stuff like this stops happening. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you have enjoyed today's episode of Finding the Funny, and a huge thank you to Douglas Vandelay and the team of Last Podcast on the Left for being a part of today's episode, Interview Comedy. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to interview John Mulaney, but I also wanted to reference his show as timely as possible, which is why that segment was added to this episode. We're hoping to have a lot more interviews done and added to future episodes, whether they be the main chunk of the episode like today's, or whether they'll be in addition to whatever content is being discussed. So please let us know what you think about the interviews, and we're very excited to find out. Make sure you tweet us at Finding the Funny on Twitter. And make sure you don't change that station, because there is lots more awesome content here on CITR. Coming up next at 7 p.m., you can enjoy Gak in Exploding Head Movies as he explores music through cinema and sounds and more. To close out the episode of Interview Comedy, we're going to play one of the best comedians in interview settings. Ladies and gentlemen, Billy Connolly.
Now, first up, another star we were lucky enough to feature before the world claimed him. He's a man from the Glasgow shipyards who was merely windswept and interesting when we first met, but is now a global superstar. Ladies and gentlemen, Billy Connolly! Your sing tune, The Archers, eh?
Don't go! Please don't go, it's the only television I get. Nobody else wants me.
No.
Please.
Is that true? Wherever you go in the world, you're rejected by talk show.
Rejected by everybody except you.
Absolutely. Well, that's my job, they're taking stray dogs, you know. This is what Now listen, first of all, first things first, happy birthday.
Thank you very, very much indeed. I'm 65. I'm an old age pensioner.
Right.
Which is very, very weird. People keep congratulating me as if I've done something. You know, it's like you've just finished the marathon. I've just stayed awake for 65 years. Well, it's weird though, getting old. Weird things happen to you. You're like, my nose hair has accelerated. You know, all my other hair just grows at the same old speed, and I'm grateful to have some. But my nose hair has... I used to trim it at once every 14 years or something. And now it's like three times a week. And I was thinking about it. I said, why is this? You know, you take it for granted your body knows what it's doing. So you think, what's it doing? What's going to happen to me that I'm going to need long nasal hair to deal with? Tie it on top of my hair or something. Or maybe it's the ultimate comb-over. Seems the underarm stuff coming over the top.
It grows in, so I mean, ears too. Your ears get full.
Well, I haven't seen my ears in a long time, so I don't really care how much hair's there, but this stuff is just extraordinary. It grows over the top of my moustache and makes it look as if I've got a beak at the front. And I'll tell you another thing, it's really weird. It's been happening for about 10 years. I'll be washing myself in the morning, I'll look in the mirror, and I'll have one hair growing out of my forehead. Which definitely wasn't there the night before. Sometimes it's here, but most of the time it's... And I said, I had about a beauty about this length. And I said to Pam, look, there it is. And she went, and pulled it out. I said, I wanted that one. He showed me for it.
What else about growing old, though? I mean, are there any virtues to growing old?
Yeah.
There are.
Well, there's like... I used to think about going to bed to have sex, and now I just think about going to bed.
Yeah.
I think, it would be great to get to bed. But the biggest terror I have of growing old is smelling of pee.
Are you on that stage yet?
I don't smell of pee, but I live in terror of smelling of pee. And I often wonder if I do smell of pee, because it might be like, you know, you can't smell it when it's you.
No.
Like, you know what I mean? When you go to your farm, when you first arrive at a farm, you go, good Jesus, how can these people live with this? And 10 minutes later, you're going, oh, that smells away, there must have been a breeze. You're just getting used to it. Another thing is involuntary noises. I started making involuntary noises. I don't mean just like... I pick things up and I go, ah, well, there you go. Like old guys, I remember old guys, yeah, do you? Yeah. Oh, Jesus, getting out of a chair. No, but my cure for that is to change the conversation so as they don't hear you doing it. So you think, I must get out of the chair. So you start a conversation. And what about Iraq? Isn't that whole thing a dreadful mess? And they'll go, I don't know, it's terrible. And then you go, the whole thing's a disgrace if you ask me. And don't even get into a beanbag chair. You might never get out. After you're 35, don't go near a beanbag. You'll be flopping about like a turtle on its back. You have to make excuses. You say to the kids, oh, on you go off to bed. I want to watch Discovery Channel here. There's a great program about bats shitting in a cave. And then when they're gone, you can roll onto the floor.
Oh, dear.
And Scarlett. My daughter Scarlett. They were making a birthday cake for me, and she announces at the top of her voice, you're in four boxes of candles, Dad. Apparently there's 20 in a box. I said, keep your bloody voice now. They light the candles, they put on an asbestos suit and a welder's helmet. Cake coming off the wall.
Did you ever imagine, though, do you remember the first time we met? It was about 1974, 75, the first show you ever did. The first television show, I think, in this country.
Yes.
Ever did, yeah. And
how brave were you?
Well, I wasn't brave at all. I mean, how inspired were we to do it?
Oh, thank
but
you.
I mean, but the extraordinary thing about it was just one joke, wasn't it, that did it, that changed
it was,
everything.
It was amazing, and it made me famous overnight. It was the weirdest experience of my life, because my manager at the time, Frank Lynch, we were driving into the studio to do your show, and a football supporter in Valencia, a Scottish supporter, had told me it. He just told me the joke in the street, and I just leant against the wall laughing. I've never met the guy again. I'd love to shake him by the hand. But I was saying to my manager, I'm going to tell that joke, I think. And he said, oh, don't even think about it. It's too dirty for television.
It was.
It was.
It was outrageous.
It was
but,
a wild
But the
joke.
Next morning, it's kind of, you became that sort of star. Let's be reminded, this is 1974, 75.
There's a guy came up to me in the street. I hope I can get away with this. It's a beauty. And he said, hey, Biggin. You know, in Scotland they call me Biggin. And I'm not very big, but everybody there's off a wee, you know. But he said, did you hear about the one, the guy had done his wife in and that? And I said, no. He said, this guy was going out to meet his friend in the pub, and he went down. He said, oh, hello, how's it going? He said, fine, fine. He said, how's the wife? He said, oh, she's dead. I said, what? He says, dead, do it again. Dead, I murdered her. Forget it. Is you kidding me on? He said, no, it's morning. He said, look, I'm not talking to you if you keep on talking like that. He said, well, please yourself. I'll show you if you want. He said, no, show me. So are we up to his tenement building, through the close, that's the entrance to the tenement. Into the back green, into the wash house, and sure enough, there's a big mound of earth. There's a bum sticking out of it. He says, is that her? He says, aye. He says, what'd you leave a bum sticking it for? He says, I need somewhere to park my bike.
Isn't it extraordinary? Oh, it's time. It was extraordinary.
I'll tell you the weirdest thing that happened. When I did the show, it was a Saturday, and I was going home to Scotland on the Sunday morning, and a Chinese guy at Heathrow asked for my autograph. God, I'm famous. And I signed it for him, but when I got to Glasgow Airport, I was coming, I'd go off the plane and come through the airport itself. People all started to clap.
Oh, really?
They'd all be watching it on television. They'd never heard stuff like that before. And it has changed. Humour has, since those early days, has changed so radically.
Yes.
But I was just doing an English tour there, and I was telling the audience that in Bournemouth, I did a concert on this Saturday night, and on the Sunday I had a day off, and I was walking along the beach. And I've often wondered what I've done to people, what's become of me. I was walking in the wind, it was the winter, and I was walking along in my little jacket, and I hear a guy running behind me. Billy! And, oh, Christ, I thought I was on my own. And I turned around, it's an older guy, probably the age I am now, with a little boy. And he's going, Billy! And the boy, I'll never forget, it's called Gavin. The man was Scottish, the boy was English, must be his granddad or something. He says, would you give Gavin your autograph? And I said, sure. It's to Gavin, best wishes, Billy Connolly. Gave him it. And they walked away, and I went up on my walk, and then I hear behind me, I thought, oh, Christ, they're back. Billy! And he says, look, Gavin's given me brain damage here. He says, could you tell him to fuck off? I said, what? He says, Gavin wants you to tell him to fuck off.